views and opinions expressed on this show or any other show on Honcho Radio Network are not necessarily those reflective of Honcho Radio owners, affiliates, or local sponsors. Any hurt feelings or mixed emotions infringing upon the BC movement should be referred to Honcho's Human Services Department, which can be reached at blah, 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 to which time you will be told to shut it. On behalf of Honcho Radio Network,
I would like to take this time now to thank you from the bottom of our blackened souls. Thank you!
Ah, it is so good to see you again, sir. I see you have brought your friends with you this time. Very good, sir. Would you like your usual table? Right this way then, sir. Please follow me.
Ah, who are we kidding? We're not that stuffy.
I knew I was being threatened. Do you think it's worth holding out? I mean, I've heard some pretty ugly things about those guys. Ugly stories.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for Politics Cafe, where we sit down and discuss anything and everything. No holds barred. Bring any topic to the table. We don't care. We'll discuss it. Come on in. Sit down. Take a load off. Now, the host of the show, Mark.
Greetings, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome once again to the Politics Cafe at www.hernco.com, the best in internet talk radio. The Politics Cafe is a small cafe located on an isolated stretch of the information superhighway, where we get together once a week and grill up some fresh topics for your digestion. Yeah, fresh topics aplenty we got here tonight, folks. A little under the weather here. Got a just fighting off the end of a cold. And it's one of them head cold kind of things. I don't really feel bad, and although last week was hell, but feeling a lot better. Yeah, getting out, still playing golf. Walked a few holes over the weekend. Had a good time. Game is coming down there. Shot 87 in a row now, twice at the same course. So I'm starting to feel even a little consistent. It's a blame the current regime for the cold. I could almost be about to, but you know what? Something happened in the current regime today that just flipped me out. And this isn't a funny thing. I'm actually serious about this. How do I put this? Look, every now and then I get flamed by the Republicans and by the conservatives out there for supporting something that someone on the left may do. And, tonight may be just that time. So if you want to flip the flamethrowers on and have at me, well, have at me. But Michelle Obama actually did something very capitalistic here tonight, at least on the surface of it. Actually did a really, really good thing. I don't know if she understands what kind of a good thing she's done. And I don't think she understands the full fruits of it. But at any rate, let me get into this. This is down off the AFP News Network. Came out about 10 minutes before the show started tonight. That Washington, U.S. First Lady Michelle Obama today praised U.S. food manufacturers for agreeing to cut 1.5 trillion calories from their products in a boost for her anti-obesity campaign. Now, she said that 16 corporations, accounting for up to 25% of the American food supply chain, would trim a total of 1 trillion calories by 2012 and 1.5 trillion calories by 2015. Now, they have agreed to reformulate their foods in a number of ways, including by addressing fat and sugar content, by introducing lower calorie options, and by reducing the portion sizes of existing single-serve products, Obama said. Now, not that none of this has happened in the past, okay? And what Michelle doesn't even understand here yet is how this is going to be done. However, the commitment represents a major step forward to providing Americans with healthier choices so that they can choose to lead healthier lives. In the weeks and months to come, we expect to hear more announcements regarding specific steps on reducing sugar, fat, and sodium in the foods that our children eat, Obama said. The First Lady has launched a countrywide campaign to combat an epidemic of child obesity and is targeting industry efforts, touting the benefits of exercise, and highlighting healthy eating and diet. The companies will make the changes to their products, which include changing various ingredients and portion sizes of individual snacks, through the Healthy Weight Commitment Foundation, a coalition of firms and trade organizations. The First Lady has shown tremendous leadership in calling for a national action to end childhood obesity, said David McKay, chairman of the Healthy Weight Commitment Foundation and the chief executive of Kellogg Company. Through this effort, the companies will provide consumers with additional healthier food options that help them achieve and maintain a healthy diet. Now, you're all saying there, Mark, what the hell are you talking about? How is this capitalistic? What's going on here? Sounds like nothing more than a socialist trying to control us. Well, in a way, it probably is. But as Mr. McKay here from the Healthy Weight Commitment Foundation and the chief executive of Kellogg Company has pointed out, what they are getting here is a new marketing scheme. All right, now that's what's going on here, folks. Make no mistake about it. All right, Michelle Obama has opened the path for a whole new marketing scheme. Oh, I want you to stop and think about things that have happened in the past. You know, we have had whole new marketing schemes introduced by pesticide-free foods. We have had whole new marketing schemes introduced by organic, by macrobiotic, by sugar-free, by fat-free, by the light industry, tons of things. And this one here introduces a whole new one. Now, there are a couple of drawbacks that could come out of this. All right, now, I can see these companies in here really having at it with their advertising campaigns. I mean, this is going to cause them to spend money in research, you know, to figure out how they're going to pull off making these products. It's going to create actually a whole new product for, or a whole new market for products along this line. You know, now, how the products are marketed, I'm not too sure. Will they get Michelle Obama's consent to use as a, will they get her consent to use her as a marketing scheme, marketing tool for this? What's the hell's the word that I'm looking for here? Some kids with a P. Will they get her, why do you guys want to know what I'm talking about here at any rate? he gets stuck for a word every now and then, but point being, will she be supporting of all this? You know, will she be the one? Will you see Michelle Obama's picture on the front of the cornflakes? That's the point that I'm trying to make here. Is she going to give it to him? What's the word I'm looking for? Begins with a P. Somebody out there in the audience, you got to help me out here. At any rate, you know, here's the point. Now, once they form all of these foods, though, will it be something that's going to be voluntary, going to be creating its own market? Or, now here's the catch to this, and this is what I'm waiting to see what happens down the line here. We have to wait and see how Michelle Obama acts on this, because this is, after all, her baby. Will, all of a sudden, you start finding school districts voting to have nothing but these foods in their school cafeterias and whatnot? Will it come down to a point where this will become a matter of law? Now, that's what I'm waiting to see here, folks. Because on the surface of this, getting these companies to go along, which is 18 companies so far, to get in on this, I can understand them wanting to be part of the marketing. You're opening up a whole new market there. Michelle Obama, you know, a new version of Kellogg's Corn Flakes, even blander than before. how it comes out, I can't tell you. But whether or not they leave this in the fair marketplace, that is the one I'm waiting to see. You know, it's going to be a tough call, but hey, had to let you folks know about it. Came out here tonight, and I thought that was just something else. By the way, her husband, of course, is showing us all exactly how on the ball he is, baby. In response to the huge oil spill that was going on in the Gulf of Mexico, the leak, President Obama today has taken decisive steps. He asked this down off of the AFP about an hour before the show started. U.S. President Barack Obama will establish an independent presidential commission to probe the huge oil spill from a wrecked BP leased rig in the Gulf of Mexico, an official said today. The commission, similar to other presidential ordered probes into civilian disasters, will will be established by executive order. Reports said that the commission will be officially unveiled in the next few days and will supplement existing government inquiries into the disaster sparked by an explosion aboard a drilling rig last month. Obama has gradually ratcheted up criticism of BP over the spill of millions of gallons of oil into the Gulf in an unfolding ecological disaster, betraying more and more frustration over the company's failure to stop the leak. A visibly angered president today, or actually on Friday, hit out at oil companies for trying to avoid blame over a massive slick and vowed an all-out effort to stop the leak pouring into the Gulf of Mexico. I will not tolerate from people. I will not tolerate more finger-pointing or irresponsibility. The people of the Gulf Coast need our help, Obama said, as he also unveiled a review of the environmental safeguards to be put in place for oil and gas exploration. He slammed the three oil companies linked to Deepwater Horizon, BP Transocean, and Halliburton for seeking to pass the blame, denouncing what he called a ridiculous spectacle by their top officials during congressional hearings. He also accused oil companies of enjoying a cozy relationship with federal agencies set up to monitor the energy sector. Well, isn't that just wonderful? Yeah, you gotta love it, folks. Obama's right on top of this one here. And as a matter of fact, somewhere in a stack of stuff here, we'll find out that today they have indeed, in fact, solved the whole problem. It's the top guy in energy there. Where is it? Here it is. Yep. The key U.S. oil official in oversight, Chris Oines, a top official overseeing offshore energy for the U.S. Minerals Management Service, an agency blamed for lax inspection in the Gulf Mexico oil spill, announced his retirement today. After 35 years of service, he will be retiring from the agency. An official in the U.S. Department of the Interior, which includes the Minerals and Management Service, told AFP on condition of anonymity. Same little bald-headed guy. I know it. Oines was named in 2007 as the Associate Director of the Offshore Energy and Minerals Management Program in the MMS with responsibility to the Shelf Oil and Gas Program. Now, this is that. Of course, it goes on and tells you how he comes amid scathing criticism for too lax enforcement on safety standards and blah, 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 blah. But the fact of the matter is, this is what they were looking for. This is how Democrats will always solve first problem. Collectivists around the world, they're no different. Communists, socialists, what have you. First thing it has to go here is whoever was in charge. Okay? And then you have to put someone else in charge who will fix the problem. And, of course, if he doesn't fix the problem, it would be very easy to solve that problem by getting rid of him and getting someone else to solve the problem. You just got to love it, folks. You just got to love it. But this is how. This is it. It's fixed. And pretty much, you're not going to hear too much more about this in the news. Coming down over the weeks here, despite the fact that the damn thing is blowing up, could blow right into the Keys here at any point in time. BP is on top of the surface there in ships, sucking some of this gasoline, sucking some of this oil off the top of the water. You gotta love it. Siphoning off the top of the water, actually reclaiming a lot of this oil. And where's that oil gonna end? Up, well, just like BP said, we'll be in downwards. Let me see if I got this somewhere out here in the news. Here we go. Yep, got it right here in front of me. Oil drops again, now down 20% in just 2 weeks. Oil prices today fell to their lowest point so far this year and are now down to about 20% in just 2 weeks as investors worry about the ripple effect of a debt crisis in Europe. There is fear in both equities and commodities market that economic weakness in Europe could spread to the U.S. and hurt the global recovery. A drop in the euro has hurt the case for investing in oil. The turnaround in oil prices has been sudden. Crude hit an 18-month high of $87.15 a barrel during trading on the 3rd of May. It's only a couple of weeks ago. It settled today at $70.08 after dipping to 27. The plunge is similar to the fall from mid-January to early February when prices fell from $84.950 a barrel. The big difference now is that the latest decline occurred at the onset of the summer driving season. That's good news for U.S. motorists who should soon see sharply reduced prices at the pump. Gas has fallen just 2% nationwide since peaking earlier this month at $2.92.9 a gallon, but that pace should be picking up heading into the Memorial Day weekend and the summer driving season. prices in many U.S. markets will be $2.75 per gallon or lower by next week, said Tom Closa of the Oil Price Information Service. Closa said the only losers from lower crude prices will be oil producers, but they will still make plenty of money at current prices. Now, gasoline fell half a cent overnight to a national average of $2.86.7 a gallon, according to AAA, Wright Express, and OPIS, whoever they are. Prices have dropped 4.1 cents in the past week and 6.2 cents since peaking May 6th. Prices remain 55.9 cents higher than a year ago, but the gap is narrowing. If oil prices remain around $7.50 a barrel, Glaza said pump prices could average $2.60 to $2.65 per gallon, with some parts of the U.S. around $2.50 or so. In its weekly report on gasoline prices released today, the Energy Information Administration said the national average for a gallon of gasoline fell 4 cents to $2.86. Now, oil prices have tumbled in the past 2 weeks on the European debt crisis, and the supplies of oil continue to grow. Debt crisis has weakened the euro, which hit a four-year low against the dollar Monday. The Federal Reserve's policy of nearly 0% interest rates to spur the weak economy hurt the dollar and encouraged investments in commodities such as oil and gold. Investors, believing that growth in developing countries would increased consumption of oil, have poured enough money into crude to set records recently on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Oil has also taken its cue from the stock market, which rose more than 70% from March 2009 to April of this year. On Monday, benchmark crude for June dropped $1.53 or 2.1%, blah, 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 blah. The rest of it's all the rest of the numbers here. Folks, if you're interested, go look it up if you're an oil trader, what have you. Point being here that we can look for lower oil prices to go down. But here's the thing, you know, the reason they're looking for this to go down is because, well, they're saying, well, because of all the debt crisis that is going on in Europe. Well, why are we having a debt crisis in Europe? Because we've got a credit crisis in Europe. We got no money. Got no money to do anything over there. Okay, no money is being delivered by the government to anyone out there that can use it in Greece. And this all that happened here last week, this $1.2 trillion bailout, which includes a huge chunk coming from the European Union, is by all means in fact, remember I brought this up last week, where will this bailout money come from? And we know who it's coming from. It's coming from our children, and it's coming from the children and grandchildren of the Europeans as well as the rest of us. We're finally starting to wake up to the fact, you know, that every time they print more money, all they're doing is taking on more debt. More and more and more and more. You know, it's going to get to a point where if you get beyond where you could possibly pay for your debts, well, people are going to stop buying it. You know, nonetheless, believe it or not, some of our debt is actually getting picked back up again in the news today that China is moving on it. And I'll find that in here somewhere at some point. Tons of stuff to get into. But look, folks, the euro is dropping, and it is dropping in a hard way. It is something that we must keep your eye on, because once we get into some sort of a production-oriented society here, once again, once we start manufacturing things, people have reason to manufacture things, it's going to be a tough nut to crack. Now, you know, with the euro dropping like this, and Europeans heading into this, could be asking them for a recession. A failure of their euro like this to go overseas could work either way. If the euro starts dropping really hard, don't forget it will make their products in the marketplace cheaper, especially overseas. Don't forget what happened here a couple of years ago. You know, there was all the great big talk, oh, the dollar's losing value, the euro is climbing, look at what's happening, look at what Bush did. Oh, everybody jumping up and down and crying. You know, in the meantime, U.S. exports climbed by 37% that quarter. So this is the same thing that could end up happening in Europe. Europeans being much more used to tightening their belts, getting down to work when it comes to this kind of stuff. Not that they're working any more than we are, but they do tend to produce. You know, per capita, they're not doing too bad. They are manufacturing things. Could end up seeing some of their products much more attractive in the marketplace than ours. All right, which would only do, you know, could do nothing more than hurt the exports that we have here. This is something we've definitely got to keep an eye on, keep your lookout for it, and see what the hell's happening and where it's going to go. All right, so let's say enough of that going right on here. Now we got some more to worry about. Where did I find it? I hid it somewhere in a stack of stuff here, and it's one I really wanted to talk about tonight, and I know it's going to turn up. This is about the U.S. automakers, and it's kind of a silly one in a way. Let me see. I know I got it dug out down here somewhere. But they're all crying. because they're being looked at very, very hard with this finance bill that's going on. I got to find it. No, I've got the article in here. There are a couple of good points in the article. At any rate, they're trying to get themselves exempted from the Senate bill here that's going through. It's supposed to be changing the way financiers and whatnot work. Man, God, where did I hide this? Because it's very, very important that I get to it. I got a few things, got a lot of notes on it, damn thing, I can't find it. All right, come on, Mark. Tell you what, I'm going to go to an early break here, folks, while I go dig through this and take a peek around here, because this article is kind of important. There are a few basic economic questions that have got to be asked about this, and a few historical questions that are going to come right along on top of it. So, Bob, if you don't have a problem, take a minute here. Actually, take 2 minutes and run a few commercials. Folks, take a look over at www.herngo.com. You may find some interesting things to purchase over there. Hey, summertime is rolling around here. Good reason as any to buy something from herngo.com. But we'll be right back. Folks, listen to the Politics Cafe, www.herngo.com. The best in Internet talk radio. And we're back. You're listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com, the best in Internet talk radio. All right, Bob, thanks for going a little early there. Yeah, I couldn't believe I couldn't find this article. It was, I thought, right on the top of the stack of stuff here, but not quite. Now, this is down off of the AP tonight by Jim Coonan, somebody I believe that we have talked about in here before, or at least used his articles. At any rate, which, by the way, the usual disclaimer, all articles read on this radio program are for informational, educational, and discussion purposes only. Alright, the nation's 18,000 auto dealers are trying to cut themselves a deal in the Senate, seeking exemption from proposed consumer regulations that would police how they write car loans. Now, the Obama administration is pushing back, using the Pentagon to make the case that soldiers are particularly vulnerable to high-interest car loan schemes. Now, no one counts the car dealers out, said Ed Mirzwinski, consumer program director at the USPIRG, a consumer advocacy group. The car dealers are like the small banks. They are everywhere. The dealers argue that when it comes to lending car buyers, or lending to car buyers, they are mere intermediaries for financial institutions that ultimately process and service the loans, which is true. Now, in waging this fight, they stand between the president and the success of a vast rewrite of financial regulations that Obama is determined to sign into law. A House version of the bill already excludes auto dealers from consumer financial rules. By standing firm now, the administration hopes the Senate version prevails. Now, the debate over a special carve-out for auto dealers who have a high visibility in their local communities comes as Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, Democrat of Nevada, seeks to wrap up debate over the broader regulatory overhaul later this week. Reid planned to vote to end debate on Wednesday, which would require 60 votes to pass. If successful, the Senate would have until Friday to dispatch remaining issues. Besides the auto dealer's exception, senators must work out differences over how to regulate complex securities known as derivatives and decide whether to toughen provisions in the bill that would restrict the ability of banks to engage in speculative trades with their own accounts. Now, Senator Sam Brownback, a Republican of Kansas, is leading the effort for the dealers with an amendment that would specifically carve them out of the bill's consumer protection provisions. While the auto industry is reeling economically, the last thing dealers need is additional regulations, their allies argue. If a dealer is acting more as a pass-through between the consumer and the bank, simply adding more burdensome regulations on the dealer will only make it more expensive for the consumer, said Bailey Wood of the National Automotive Dealers Association. Auto dealers, however, still make money from the loans. Now, this is also true. Consumer advocates argue that that's enough to place them under extra scrutiny. The Pentagon has been especially aggressive in opposing an exemption for auto dealers, initiating its campaign after the House agreed to exclude dealers from its bill. In February, Undersecretary of Defense Clifford Stanley wrote to the Treasury saying that nearly 3 out of 4 military financial counselors, in informal non-scientific polling, reported that they advised service members on issues relating to abusive auto financing. Last week, Brownback wrote to Stanley asking him for details on the report for the military counselors. Is it the position of the department that auto dealers pose a specific threat to military readiness? Yeah, it goes on and on. It talks a little bit about the Army and the Pentagon and blah, 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 blah. Which, folks, is nothing here more than a flank side address here to try to get you over on their side as far as what car dealers do. Now, having been a car salesman, having worked extensively in automotive dealerships from back to front, from front to back and inside and out, really having a good knowledge of how they operate, I'm here to tell you that, yes, all right, financial institutions outside of the car dealership are generally the ones that are making the loans. The car dealer, a lot of times, more often than not, is a, you know, just the intermediary. Now, depending upon who it is he is dealing with, sometimes they can look to get a certain amount of a kickback from different banks for providing them with so many loans a month, what have you. All right, they can also are in a position of selling you a higher interest rate. They may be able to get money from a bank at 6%. They turn around and tell you it's 8%. Well, they collect the difference on that 2%. All right, that 2% of the difference is actually their fee. They make money on that. Make no mistake about it. So whether or not you're going to exempt them from any new regulations. But here's the point. All right, let me explain something to you about over the last few years with automotive dealings and what has gone on here. And I, through the 90s, now I watched prices of automobiles just climb. Now, of course, none of this really hit the consumer price index, the CPI. But for various reasons. But it, just to give you a good example, a Buick LeSabre, which in 1992 went for $17,889, remained virtually unchanged, other than they cheapened the car up a little bit by getting rid of the composite front fenders and going back to steel. Steel was more reliable, steel was more repairable, blah, 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 blah. Insurance companies basically pushed for it. Because once one of them got dented, well, they didn't really get dented, they got broken and you had to replace it. There was no repairing it. So they, you know, they cut that out of there, put steel back in. A little cheaper to put in, a little cheaper to maintain. But at any rate, the price of the car went from $17,988 to $28,640. It was a climb of almost 50% in that original car's value for a car in 1998. We're talking about a six-year period, all right, that this went up. Now, I'm going to tell you, all the other cars went right up along with the same thing. Now, as a result, all right, dealers had to find creative ways to finance cars. Prior to 1992, your typical car loan out there was 4 or maybe 5 years. Your average car payment was somewhere between $200 and $325 a month. This is a lot of people brought me their cars. During the '90s, this started to go up. People who were buying pretty much the same car, who had bought a car that they figured that they were generally in the equity in, which meant that they didn't owe as much on the car as the car was worth, could use that difference as a balance, you know, to help bring down the payment of their next car. You know, help use it for a down payment. You know, if, look, if you got a car that's worth $5,000 and you only owe $2,000 on it, you're $3,000 to the good if you're trading that car in. And that'll be $3,000 that comes off the price of the car that you're trading in. You know, help make it a little more accessible to you to get, you know, making the bank think, well, he's got a little more in here. Bank might be swayed by a little bit lower of a credit rating by the amount of money that you're putting down on something. You know, all these things come into play. And, of course, you know, that credit rating is also your how low you could get of a loan also dependent strictly upon your credit rating. Just something you got to think about here, okay? The reason that it's like this, okay, is because, A, there are laws which set the maximum amount on how much some lenders will charge, and they're the ones who are only willing to take a chance at you. All right, if you have a poor credit rating, you can go nowhere else but to these kind of guys. Capital One, places of this nature, used to be Geico, used to be a good one for it. General Electric, well, not so much Geico Insurance, but GE Capital was another one. You know, high interest kind of a loan that you could get to for a long time there. GMAC was kind of working in that direction, and you know, being very, very, you know, very easy to get a loan from, very easy to get a lease from there for a long time. Ford was always tough. For some strange reason, I don't know, Ford just held on to its standards right there. Seemed to survive through all this. Don't forget, Ford was also a company that didn't need to bail out when the time came around. But what generally happened through the rest of the 90s here was the fact that these prices started to go up. And on top of that, another really funny thing happened. and that was that the quality of the cars themselves was going up. And this was causing a huge demand for the cars. But where that demand was really showing itself were in fleets. All right, now by fleets, I generally what I'm talking about here are places like Hertz Rent-A-Car, National Rent-A-Car, Avis Rent-A-Car, various leasing agencies that might service big corporations and whatnot, and, you know, things of this nature. People who will buy cars in lots of, you know, 50 to 100 to 200 or maybe 1,000 cars in a shot. Generally, you're buying them through a dealer at a specific price that has been negotiated by them and the company itself. You know, whereas the dealer basically gets the cars, they make a little bit of money on each one, and they make the money that it takes to service them as the final step in the assembly line and get them ready for the road and deliver them to wherever it is they're going. But the big thing about these cars is that they were in demand from these companies because they were so well built. You had very little problem with them. It came with a bumper-to-bumper 3-year, 36,000-mile warranty, which the insurance, or the, I'm sorry, the fleet leasing companies and whatnot, like I said, Hertz, National, Avis, all them guys, were glad to hang on to the car for that long. Do the oil changes on it, keep the maintenance up on it, because anything else that went wrong, you could just ship it to the local dealer. Dealer would fix it for free. All right, got a good thing going here. But the trick is here, you know, once that warranty runs out, you got to start spending it yourself. So what they would do is at the end of 2 years, they would just take all of the cars that they had bought on that date 2 years earlier and run them all to the auction at once. Now, this had a funny move on the market here. What it really did was, is it started to flood the market with good, reliable, used cars. But the market was flooded with them. Okay, well, now you have an oversupply of something. When supply has risen too far beyond the demand, the prices of them drop. And what we were finding was that we could buy 1 to 2 year old cars that had generally less than 24,000 miles on them for between 45 and 55, maybe 60% of the original price of the car. Sometimes even cheaper than that. I saw 2-year-old Ford Tauruses with under 24,000 miles on them that came off of that came with a sticker price of around $26,000, running through the auction at between $9,000 to $10,000, maybe $11,000 a shot. All right, good deal for everybody at this point, especially if you are in the market for a used car. However, if you are trading that car in, now you're running into a whole nother situation. All right, you have got the 3-year-old Taurus. You, like the car dealers or like the automotive leasing companies, don't really want to take a chance on another car. You could afford the payment. The payment on it was about $300 a month. And you had no problem with it. You can say, ah, shit, you know, can I pick up another one? Well, the payment goes up 10, 20 bucks, who cares? Then you get in there and find out all of a sudden that, A, okay, the car that you took out a 5-year loan on for $24,000 was only paid off to the tune of about $15,000 or $16,000. All right, and then to find out that your car was offered for sale out on that dealer's lot for $12,000 or all of a sudden just put you in an untenable position. Instead of being $3,000 to the good with your used car that you were trading in, you were $6,000 to $7,000 in the hole. All right, which meant that you were upside down. Which meant that that car that you were hoping to get at least $17,000 or $18,000 on, hell, it was a $26,000 car when it was new, and cover your loan and maybe get a little bit of money to put down on the next car, wasn't going to happen. Alright, now you're stuck. Now you're sitting here looking at, jam, I want to buy another car. It's either that or I start taking risks on whether or not I have to pay to fix this one up. Now, the American car buyer, been buying American cars for a long time, knows better than this. He hasn't had a lot of problems with this car, but he also knows that the car was under warranty for the last 3 years. And even though he didn't use that warranty, he's not going to trust him. That's simple. He wants to trade the car in. But what do you do? Okay, now the price of that car that you had spent $24,000 or $25,000 on is now up to $27,000. All right, so your payment is going to go up for that reason. But on top of that, you've now got to come up with either $6,000 down, okay, to pay off your old loan, or this new $26,000 or $27,000 car that you were going to buy had that $6,000 or $7,000 tacked onto it. Now you're getting into a brand new car with a sticker price of $26,000, $27,000, and the note you are writing for it is into the $30,000. Now, most banks would look at this and say, sorry, you know, we are not about to go upside down in an automobile. This guy's going to have to come up with it. And car dealers, as they have done throughout history, went to bat and tried to figure out their ways around it. They went into lease. And we did this. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. We went and back-ended a lot of those $5,000 and $6,000 differences. All right. So basically, what it was looking like, and it was all to keep your payments down. You know, because here you are, you're stuck in a position here where you know your payment of $250 to $350 a month was now, you know, instead of going up, you know, $10 or $20 a month, was now going up $100 a month. It was going up $150 a month for the exact same car that you were looking at just a few years earlier, you know, that you had bought. And I mean, it's screwing people. Yes, exactly. Balloon payments at the end of the lease and at the end of the loan. You know, you would end up having a loan that was similar to what you were doing, but instead of coming up with that $5,000 or $6,000 loan, you were promising that you would pay it at the end. But of course, you really weren't hoping to pay it at the end. What you were looking to do was to sell it off at the end before you got to the end of those payments, and hopefully the car will be worth more than that. Of course, the banks were all saying, well, as long as you made all those five-year payments on time, we'll automatically renew that loan for 2 years so that you could pay off the rest of it, blah, 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 blah. But now you're looking at it not being able to buy a car for 7 years. All right, and car dealers were definitely looking at this and shitting their pants and having to come up with all sorts of creative ways of financing. All right, so the bottom line is here, though, what they were trying to fight through all of this strictly was inflation. Now you don't need me to explain to you why inflation is what it is. You know, when you have a currency system that is working on promises, you're not going to be able to get away from inflation. It's built into the system. There's just no getting around it. You know, it's not going to happen. And now, if you couple that with a few things that came along, the CAFE regulations and whatnot, which forced the other automakers to build cars that they were never going to sell, now where are you up against? You know, you're up into a car business here that is just fighting its way up a hill that just keeps getting taller and steeper in front of them. Further up the hill they think they're going, the more hill they got in front of them, and the steeper it's getting. And it got to a point here, well, we all know what happened, you know. Car companies all of a sudden needed a bailout. Now we're looking at this again with new regulations. Which brings me to the big question here, and I'm going to throw it out to the room, anybody out there that might want to answer this. Are we doing the right thing here as far as trying to throw all these financial regulations at this whole thing? You know, is it going to work to throw these financial regulations at the banks? Is it going to work to throw it at the, at Wall Street, at investment firms, at car dealers or whatnot? Or is this just something that should have been done in the past, now that it's being done, it's too late? Or is it just a natural effect here? You know, that's the big key here. See, I don't see any of this as being able to really save the system. I really don't. I mean, I'm at a point in time here where I'm convinced that the system itself is doomed. That we are indeed, in fact, heading the exact same way Greece is going right now. Same way the euro is going. I think the dollar is going to fall right shortly behind it. I think the Chinese out there right now, which is, like I say, I still have another article here to read about them, who are back snapping up huge amounts of American debt. And are also snapping up European debt at this point in time, too, because evidently it's going cheap. What kind of a position are they going to be in when it comes time to collect this debt? Are people going to be able to inflate their way out of this debt? What's going on here? Or do you think it's just going to be, I think business is going to go on as usual? So wait to see some hands up here. We got quite a few people in the room tonight. I do want to welcome you all to the room. But I'd love to get an answer from somebody out there that thinks he might have us. And I was talking to a financial wizard a couple of weeks ago who told me that this is all they can do. It's all they can possibly do is just finance their way out of the debt. Nothing anybody else is going to be able to do about it. It's the only way out. Everybody's just going to have to deal with it. And of course, we'll still be using the U.S. paper dollar. There's no doubt about it. And what I hear instead is that we're going to be in for a bumpy road for 10 years, but that somehow or another we'll get out of it. Now, I'm waiting to see this bumpy road. Is it going to be enough? We are throwing more regulations at what I believe to be a faulty system to begin with, really just a moot point. I mean, let's face it. You know, this system, which I believe to be faulty, is constantly under a barrage of new regulations. And to what end? You know, what it does, you put new regulations in there, it seems to create new problems. Or it just makes new and ingenious people find new and ingenious ways to fight their way around these problems. Or to move around these problems. Or to legislate around these problems. Or to create products that make their way around these problems. I mean, we got to face it. There's a couple of things that are going on here that these guys have no clue about. You know? I mean, you know, part of this article here, and I quote, "Senators must still work out differences over how to regulate complex securities known as derivatives and decide whether to toughen provisions in the bill that would restrict the ability of banks to engage in speculative trades with their own accounts." It's like, well, does a bank actually have an account that's all its own? Or does the banker have an account? You know, what's going on here? That's what I want to know. You know, this is the point. Do any of these people out there understand what a derivative is? Which is why they're having a hard time trying to make regulations concerning the derivatives. You know, exactly which derivatives are they talking about? Because you can make many, 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 many derivatives come off of something. All you got to do is get a different person to promise something else. Okay, slash, you have your derivative. You know, and hey, there are even other people that you get to go along with them that might even insure that derivative. You know, with other derivatives called swaps. Wonderful things out there that I defy anybody to explain fully and anyone's understanding. You know, most of your swap documents out there are between 900 and 1,000 pages long. Stop and think about this. Where's it going? You know, where are we going with all this? That's the point here. Is Obama just pulling our chain? Is he trying to advance this? Is he trying to advance the rate of catastrophe that we're coming up to? You know, because I'm up at that point here now where I believe that this administration and the rest of the clowns that are in it, although maybe not Barack Obama, he may not know. I'm almost willing to give him a doubt here, you know, whether he's intelligent enough. I look at it this way. Look, if he is intelligent enough to understand exactly what's going on here, then you'd have to call the guy evil. And I don't want to call the guy evil just yet, you know. What I'm going to say here is, maybe he's just dumber than Bush was about it. You know, maybe that's really what it's all about. Maybe he is just depending on his financial advisors, on guys like Timothy Geithner and Lawrence Summers and the rest of the clowns that are up there, the rest of the rejects from Goldman Sachs to lead him down the right path. You know, that's the tough part. What's the situation here? You know, does he understand this? Are they moving at his behest, or is he moving at theirs? You know, it could well be. Well, let's face it. You know, like all the rest of these Democrats, what you run into is they think they know people that have the answers. They think that if they can just direct these people to do the right thing, that they will do it. They think they have the power to direct these people to do the right thing, and that, of course, they will do it. And that's all stuff you really got to stop and think about. Will they really do it? Are they really going to be able to pull it off? And that's a really tough call here. You know, it's a real tough call. Are they just going to blunder, blurst, and fart their way around these things until they put it off for another 25 or 30 years? You know, meanwhile, inflating the living shit out of our currency. You know, basically saving themselves from any depressionary cycles that we may end up into. Socializing any of the risks that they may be exposing themselves to. You know, of course, exposing all of us to it instead. I mean, you just gotta love it. You know, so where's it gonna go? You got anybody out there want to answer up to this one? I know you're all sitting there scratching your thumbs. Exactly where is Mark heading with all of this tonight? Well, fact of the matter is, folks, I'm just trying to keep things going from the last few weeks here where I've been explaining that the monetary system, the way it is set up out there, just cannot work the way it is. It's going to head its way downwards. I think we're seeing this in the European Union right now. At some point in time, there will have to be a final reckoning of payments over there. There's going to have to be a point in time where some substance is going to have to change hands, especially on a major level between the banks, before anybody can say that anything's actually paid off. And then once it is, how are they going to be able to generate what they're going to need from that? You know, how are they going to distribute it? How will it be moved around? How will goods and services, or what incentive will they be using for their public to produce goods and services? Some very, very, very tricky questions here, which right now are being answered only with what? Molotov cocktails. You know, being answered with riots in the streets. You know, this is what you got going on here. And be prepared, because the rest of this is coming right down the line. France is sitting on the boiling edge of this right now. Spain, right, also on the boiling edge of this. This could be disrupting over. I said years ago that this is what's going to happen to this European Union, that they are going to take it as some bit of national pride here when one European country turns down another European country for a loan. You know, now the EU has managed to work its way out of not paying, making a loan to these people, you know, by promising that they will make a loan, and by doing what? Well, by either A, roping the rest of the world into it, through the International Monetary Fund, you know, some of the bigger banks, some of the other countries of Europe, and of course the Chinese, what have you, or are they going to be able to, the question here is, aren't we going exactly the same way? You know, aren't they, or are they just putting all of this off? What are they going to rescue? Because let's face it, you know, the money that is going to be used to bail out Greece is just going to go right off. It's going to be distributed, whereupon it will be consumed, and once consumed, it will no longer exist. You know, that's the whole part about it. People don't seem to understand it. You know, you can distribute wealth once, but if you want to distribute it again, well, you've got to come up with more wealth. Wealth is something that has to be produced. You know, if there is no production of wealth, there will be no distribution of wealth. You know, much unlike what the liberals all believe out there. Well, you know, there's not much money to go around. It's how it flows that counts. You know, that's completely wrong, folks. You know, wealth is one of those things that has to be created on a daily basis. And if the only way you can save it, make things happen, is when you are producing more wealth than you are consuming. But when you are consuming more wealth than you are producing, you are working your way into a position of debt. Be very, very careful about that position of debt, because you may not find your way out of that position of debt. You know, currently, all we are doing to relieve near-term and immediate debt is by creating longer-term and not-so-immediate debt, you know, with the promises to pay it off later and later and later. Don't forget that debt all comes with interest. The only way you're going to pay off that debt with interest is to have more debt created, in order to make that interest to pay itself off. It's a self-defeating cycle, folks. There's just no getting around it. Any way you look at it. There are those that may disagree with me, and even some of them that are listening in this room. One in particular, which I can't believe why his hand isn't up yet, beat me over the head with this. But fact of the matter is, folks, that all these regulations that are coming down the road here, I don't think are going to be enough to save us. I don't think it's going to be enough any way that you slice it. I don't think that firing the people who are in charge of what's going on out there is going to be a way to save it. I think that until we wake up and realize that creating money out of debt is something that just does not work, has not worked in all of mankind's history, will not work into the future, is until we wake up and realize this, we could all well be sunk. We could all be well be buried under an ocean of debt that might just get too deep to be able to swim your way out of. You know, how'd you like to be at the bottom of a lake, and as you swam up, all you were doing was getting deeper and deeper because the lake was getting more and more and more filled. You know, there comes a point in time where you're going to run out of air, and you ain't going to make it to the top. And I'm here to tell you, folks, that time is upon us. This is exactly what you see going on over in Greece and in European countries right now. And they have woke up to this fact. You know, how are we going to follow suit here? Because we're going to run into the same problem. Are we going to be able to settle this with a peaceful means? You know, is legislation or something by our, or is our Congress going to be able to sit there and say, whoa, back off, we're making a big mistake here, this is what we need to do to fix the mistake? Or will we just sit there and start making excuses? Or deepen the mistake, make the mistake broader? You know, that is what I'm hearing from most of the economists, especially those from the left out there right now. That the best way to do this is to keep on going even deeper. I heard a real brilliant economist on NPR the other day tell us that, geez, when Obama went with $787 billion in that bailout plan, he really should have went for $1.2 trillion. Because that would have kept the unemployment. You know, I don't believe him for a minute. You know, the point of the matter is that Obama kept it to where he could because he knew that inflation would go beyond that. Or at least somebody knew. You know, once again, I don't know if Obama knew what the hell was going on there or not, folks. I really, really, really don't. I almost have got my doubts. All right, well, now what else am I going through here? Blah, 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 blah. There was something else in here that I did want to run on to. I'm not going down that road. Blah, blah, blah. Oh, yeah. Social Security, which is facing a 5.3 trillion shortfall over the next 75 years. But, the report says a massive gap could be erased to payroll taxes and benefits. Now, some of the options are politically dangerous, such as increasing payroll taxes or reducing annual cost of living increases for Social Security recipients. Others, such as gradually raising the age when retirees qualify for full benefits, wouldn't be felt for years, but would affect millions. Many wouldn't affect current recipients, including the report by the Special Senate Committee on Aging. Senator Herb Cole, chairman of the committee, said small tweaks are all that is needed to bolster Social Security's finances for future generations of retirees. Currently, 53 million Americans get Social Security benefits averaging $1,067 a month. In 75 years, 122 million, or one-fourth of the population, will be drawing benefits. On its current path, Social Security is projected to run out of money by 2037, largely because of aging baby boomers reaching retirement. For the first time since the 1980s, Social Security will pay out more money in benefits this year than it collects in payroll taxes. So we're already there, folks. The longer action is delayed, the harder we'll get to address the program's finances. Modest changes can be made, hold, the Democrat of Wisconsin told the Associated Press. They are not draconian, as the report points out. They can be done and will be done. Well, of course, if it's coming from a Democrat, can't be draconian. But you gotta love it, folks. You know, we're on the side out here. They're looking at stuff. Don't feel bad. Feel good. Don't worry. Be happy. Yeah, pretty soon they're gonna have praying in a little cubicle to the big picture of the moose sitting on the other side. It's going to be telling you, buy more, harder, feel better. You can just see it coming. You guys all remember the movie THX, 1128, whatever it was. It was a pretty scary movie. But it's just where we're headed with these Democrats, if they could have their way. Make no doubt about it. We've got Senator Herb Cole here just acting just like the guy behind the screen. Don't feel bad. Feel good. All right, folks, listen, I want to thank everybody for coming tonight, at least for listening. I want you all to keep thinking about this. You know, there's a lot that's going to happen here over the next few weeks. My advice, a couple of things you can do. Number one, work your way to a position where you are paying off your debts. Get rid of as much debt as you possibly can for whatever's coming down here, because debts are going to end up changing hands. Which hands they end up in, you may not like. Always invest in silver, invest in gold, and save your small change, folks. So I'm here to tell you, in the end of this, the small change is what it is. It's going to be saving your butt. It's going to be saving this country's butt. Don't forget, it still is the coin of the realm. It is still, you know, despite what anybody else is going to tell you about, it is still substance. It is still something. It is still a metal. It still has an intrinsic value. And it may well be back into play before you know it. I'm here to tell you, folks, that the amount of change that's out there right now is available today, you know, is way more than was available to the average person years back. Stop and think about the interest that is being collected just to create paper money. You know, stop and think about where paper money comes from, how it came about. You know, who it is that invented this stuff, and what it is that they're going to do about it when the time comes to collect on it. Yep, gold is on the up again. Yeah, silver, for some strange reason, isn't moving hard. So, personally, I suggest that if you're into it, you got a few bucks to put away, that silver is the way to go. Yeah, you'll always be able to get what you can for your gold, but the fact of the matter is, if you are dealing in gold, you're going to be charged higher prices for things. And that's just the way things work out here, you know. Hey, a Mercedes costs more than a Chevy. It always did, even though there ain't a whole lot of difference between the two of them. You know, it's because that guy with the gold is looking for the Mercedes. He's getting something better. And the guy that's selling the Mercedes wants the gold. That's really what it's all about. As far as going from day to day to day, you know, silver, baby. That's the one reliable thing that we've always had. Yeah, trombone player, collapsed Greek. Well, I don't know. At any rate, folks, we have hit that top of the hour here. Once again, the tables are getting piled high with the chairs. And the lights are growing dim. Maitre D' has finished up all his duties around here, so it's time to shut the cafe down. However, as always, the bar will be open, and so will Politics Lobby 4, Patriots Unite Voice Room over here on Pal Talk. Feel free to join us up at the bar. As always, first round is on me. But from the show, folks, it's time once again, got to say goodnight. So thank you very much for coming and listening to the Politics Cafe at www.herncode.com. the best in internet talk radio. We'll talk to you all next week, folks.